Position number 10112, relayed.
Mr. Thompson, relayed.
The prisons had passed this message about drowning, as I said, and the local papers got onto it, and the news was out. Now, what actually happened, I think it's necessary to backtrack a little bit and say what actually happened at Hola, because there have been plays written about it, books written about it, and no one knows the truth. I think, and I'm not boasting here, because of my proximity to events, that I'm probably the only person who does know. And I gave evidence to inquest and I gave evidence to an inquiry about this, but the results of that evidence was not entirely as I thought it should be. Now, the very first thing was that within this Hola detention camp, there was one compound which was for very, very hardcore detainees who would refuse to do anything. They were totally non-cooperative. They wouldn't even eat. They'd go on hunger strikes. They'd do all sorts of things. And it had been decided at the very highest level in Kenya, at the war cabinet level, that's the governor's private war cabinet, that these people had got to be made to work. They couldn't forever just stay in this compound doing nothing. And it was decided that they should be taken out of the compound, they should be taken off down the road, and they should be given some digging to do. Now, it was the very essence of this was briefing, that the prison officers should brief their prison warders who supervise the detainees, and they should brief them properly. The aim was right. Whether it was possible to achieve, I won't say, I don't know. I think it would have worked, properly done, because even the detainees were probably getting tired of being a bit bee-minded in that dreadful climate. But unfortunately, the prison officers were very much people who had been taken on short contracts for the emergency. And I do them no disservice in saying that they did not speak the best quality Swahili by any means. It was very ragged Swahili. So when it came to briefing their prison officers, it came out something like this. Instead of saying, now, we have a plan which we have to obey, it's been laid down step by step, you must be very careful, they weren't capable of interpreting that. It came out more as, today we're going to take out the detainees, they're going to be made to work, and you've got to see they do it. And knowing the Swahili used, and the ability of those men to use the Swahili, that's what it would sound like to the Africans who were listening to them. So it started with imperfect and bad briefing. You also have to know that these detainees over the preceding months had frequently shown the contents of latrine buckets over their guards. The guards are mainly Nandi, incidentally, of the Nandi tribe. They'd sworn at these people, cursed them, and the Nandi hated their guts anyway. Again, you see, bad briefing, bad selection. Those people should not have been allowed to take those detainees out. But it happened.
Well, who should they have chosen? From a different tribe?
I think so, yes. I think I would even have gone so far. And again, of course, I'm talking with hindsight now, but if it had been me, I think I would have demanded that I had fresh material sent in to do it.
From which tribe?
Any tribe. People who had not been intimately mixed up with them in that camp. Terrifically hot by day, bright streaming sunlight, barren area, unpleasant to work in, unpleasant conditions. The staff quarters were made of corrugated iron, which is hell in a hot climate. Bad briefing, hate between the parties. And so, when these chaps had been taken out and had started being stroppy, the prison warders, to tell the truth, had set about them. That's what had happened. And they'd produced their truncheons and had been some bashing, as a result of which 11 died and several were injured. And this cover-up about water made things worse. There was no deep, dark imperialist design to kill Mau Mau. detainees. This was something that happened because it was done badly. Doesn't excuse it. Well, anyway, I sit up all that night with the police and we try and get to the bottom of the case, get to the truth of the case. And our conclusion was precisely what I've told you, that bad briefing and the hate of the warders for the detainees and the detainees for the warders had led to a clash, which had led to a fight and so on. But we're now in a position where publicity has it they've drowned. Well, the next day I am ordered by the governor to fly up to Nairobi and to tell him what had happened. So I fly up to Government House and I walk straight into the governor, Sir Evelyn Baring, and I tell him precisely what had happened, in my view, and he took in the point and questioned me about the water and all the rest of it, and I said it just could not have happened. I knew it had not had happened, and that I had been forced to assert command which had been disobeyed, and I had to admit I had no power to enforce my rule upon the prison's officers, but if it had have happened, we could have presented the correct picture first. That's all I wanted to do. What I wanted to say is that there had been a happening at Hola in which 11 prisoners had died, and this matter was being investigated as a matter of urgency. That was all that was necessary to say at that stage, and the public would be kept informed. Instead of that, we start off with a lie. Well, when I was with the governor in his office, he actually phoned London about this. And he was told in my hearing on the phone that a change of story would be very difficult to handle in the House, so for the time being, stick with the story. Which he protested about, I remember, but that didn't help us either, you see. Well, one thing that did come out of this was that the governor put me in overall charge of Hola Camp. I never went back to my district headquarters, 120 miles downriver. Never went back at all. Eventually my headquarters was transferred to Hola. And so I was back with Mau Mau again, and oathing ceremonies and card indexes and all the rest of it. Well, the effect of Hola was that, first of all, there was an inquest which found that it was accidental death. And then a departmental inquiry of prisons, which exonerated the prison officers. In one sense, that was wrong. They shouldn't have been exonerated because it was due to the way they handled it that it occurred. But in another sense, it was correct to exonerate them because they had not been properly briefed by their department. No prison officer, as far as I know, was ever taken to a training course which taught him anything about tribal custom or the people he was going to deal with. Neither was there any insistence on the officers in charge of the camps. And here, you've got to bear in mind, they're well stretched by the emergency and the demands of the emergency, could speak reasonable Swahili. Or any instructions which said if they couldn't, they were to use the best quality interpreter available. Well, I'm now put in overall charge, but what does that mean? I'm not actually made a prisons officer. The governor says, you run things, Thompson. But at least it does mean that a roof is found for me and I move into this dreadful camp. And I have a considerable amount of wallop, actually. But the news getting out and the effect it had politically in England was to hasten world and British demand for an early release of detainees. And so instead of keeping them in durance vile for as long as their local people wanted them kept, I mean, the local Kikuyu wanted them kept out of the way because they felt if these baddies came back, things could go wrong again, that there was pressure for release. Now, one thing the administration did not want was to have all these people let out in one fell swoop. Things would go from bad to worse if they did. It would be a victory for Mau Mau. So I was given the direct task by the governor of sitting down, and I think there were 2,400 detainees in this place, of actually personally interviewing, de-oathing if possible, and rehabilitating these people with a view to getting them home quickly. Well, there were three kinds of detainee. those who'd be willing to spill the beans and cough it up just to get home, those who would tell you as little as they could in the hope that you'd believe them and send them home, and those who would just stick their tongue out you and curse you and say to hell with you and all you stand for. Well, I obviously couldn't do all this personally, so I sent back to my old friends in Fort Hall and asked my good old friend Sergeant Major Andrea, the gentleman who'd been with me with the war diary one, and some of the old home guard that I'd known and trusted from the beginning, and got them to come down as my inner team. And I got additional representatives from every district of Kikuyuland to come down and join me, so we had coverage for each area. I asked each area to send me down as many copies of their indexes as they could. And the same, we had a team from Nairobi as well. And we sat down in the heat of the day, day after day, with these teams, and we went through each one of these people. The pressure was on for release. The people at home, the chiefs, the headmen, the district commissioners and district officers certainly didn't want them back. I'd got a political directive that they should go back. And I had to hasten the process. So we tried to filter them back to their home districts in convoys of not more than 200 at a time. Now, the thing to do was to find the first 200 so that those remaining behind could see there was a way out. At a long last, there was a way out. Of course, many of these chaps had been held on very slim dossiers. Sort of thing a dossier would contain is known to have been a member of a forest gang and present at oathing ceremonies. We needed to know much more than that. Sometimes we had to con them into believing that we knew much more. But the object, as I say, was to wear them down, get them to spill the beans and get them home. And in the end, about this time, I think really about half of the detainees, they weren't all hardcore by any means, were not very hardcore, were fed up with being there and wanted to get home. And as I was saying earlier, we had to get the first 200 home into the districts, and the districts had to receive them and see that they were behaving so they'd be willing to take more and then keep the process going. Now, my staff, I must say, were magnificent. Many of them had lost their homes, their families, their property, and they should have really had axes to grind, big ones too, but they never let me down. And we worked on the easy cases first, obviously, which not only gave us a lot of information about Mau Mau, but Mau Mau within the camp itself, which we needed to know. And we didn't want any of these people to relapse. Now, we did threaten them with reconfinement if they relapsed, but we knew darn well that politically this couldn't be done. We couldn't reconfine people we'd released. This would have created too much political pressure from home. And step by step, we bit into it and we eventually got them released. And messages kept coming back from Kikuyuland that the early releases were behaving themselves. They were known, of course, to the chiefs. The chiefs and the headmen kept a watchful eye on them. And then, when the people at home saw their sons, so the gangsters in the main had been young people, beginning to get home, people at home started sending letters to the camp saying, oh, do come home, tell the truth and come home. Don't be silly, don't stick it out in detention. And this helped us quite a lot. But it was very hard, very exhausting business. And by the time I really had released the first 1,000, I was on my knees. I'd also picked up bilharzia on the Tana River and I was beginning to be a fairly sick man. And eventually I went home. But before I close this, just from my notes, I see that by January 1960, the numbers of detainees in camp had been reduced by half. My headquarters had been closed down and moved up to Hola, where it remained, and I gather it is still there to this day. And as a closure to this, I would like to read you a letter, as written in English, from an ex-detainee at the camp, from Keragoya, which was in the Embu district, 2nd of January 1960. Dear sir, I should have written this letter soon after my arrival, but I thought to delay for some time in order to have something to tell you about the condition of this new world to me. But before I come to that, I have to mention my indebtedness to your prolonged endeavour to expel me from the detention camp. although it was part of your duty to prepare for the release of Restrictes in Hola, I feel that you took a special interest, and it is because of that reason that I have special gratitude to you. It is not an exaggeration to say that during my stay I learned that you had changed your heart before you advised us to change ours, soon after taking over charge of the Restrictes at Hola. Had every European and African followed your example of changing the heart, practically instead of theoretically, lovely word that, much of the existing racial controversy in Kenya would have been avoided. I wish and hope that the remaining Restrictes will enjoy your stay at Hola, and they will at last return enjoy your success with them. Our journey home was good and enjoyable, and the convoy leader, Mr. Kimani, treated us courteously throughout, and he safely handed us over to our district commissioner. And when I reached home, I met all members of my family, who became extremely happy to see me with them once again after 7 years. Everybody in the country is busy in the shambas, and the season looks favourable. I fitted myself in the community here, both socially and in the business. I should mention that many people here are economically awfully bad. They cannot manage their living, but that is because the change of going out for employment, the chances, I think he means, of going out for employment are limited. I'm not sure of my economical position too, but with God's help, things will shape favourably. I wish you a happy new year, and hope you try to fit yourself into the changing conditions of our new Kenya, where we all expect to remain good citizens. Please convey my best wishes to the staff who've struggled with you for our release. I beg to remain yours sincerely, Romano Njamuno Gikunju. I rather like that.